Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, John Schwab here from Curtain Call, and welcome to episode 160 of the Curtain Call podcast. I sincerely hope everyone is staying safe out there as we begin to continue unwind ourselves from lockdowns and pandemic situations, and we start to explore life amongst real people again. Now, on the website, Matt and I have been sitting idly by. For those of you who are theater, entertainment, and live events professionals, head on over to curtaincallonline.com and check out our new platform. I think you'll agree it is the platform you have been needing and waiting for far, far too long. Sign up, build out your profile, and start getting found for work. But now for this week's guest. Listeners to Broadway Radio's Today on Broadway will recognize my guest today as she's recently joined their lineup alongside Matt Temenini and Ashley Stevens, and occasionally James Marino. He's a part-timer. Grace Aki is an actress, stand-up comedian, and podcaster in her own right, and you can find her podcast, Tell Me on a Sunday, on all good streaming platforms. And you can find deets in the show notes, but I will leave them at the end of this episode, too. You will hear Grace and me talking about one of her episodes of the Tell Me on a Sunday podcast. It's the episode titled Her Story. Now, it's a powerful tale of emotional abuse, gaslighting, and other mental health issues. It is a compelling listen, but a word of warning that it may be distressing to some listeners. And as you can imagine with following that statement, Grace is a powerhouse. The energy she brings to every episode of Today on Broadway is palpable. And when I heard that Grace was performing her one-woman show To Free a Mockingbird, I just had to reach out to her and dig a little deeper on how she arrived at this point in her career. Have a listen. When I heard that you were doing a show, I just thought, this is fantastic. I really want to chat to Grace. And when you said you were streaming, I had to talk to you. And I just was like, okay, I'm going to go from the beginning, Grace. I would love for you to tell me, just tell me a little bit about yourself and why, how you decided that this industry that we're a part of is the right thing.
Did I decide that, John? Did I decide that? Oh God. I guess if I'm starting like from the beginning of all of it, I will tell you that my mom said that I could not stop being a showman when I was like 3. So she put me in a dance class because she heard that like if you put a child in a dance class really early and then they show like, you know, some kind of movement and promise, like it's better to get them in when they're really, really young. I couldn't even read, but I could dance. And so I started dancing. And then when I was 5, I wouldn't shut up. And my mom was like, okay, well then you can audition for this play. And then I auditioned for the play. It was The Three Little Pigs. My mom thought, oh, this will be great because like, she'll just get like a little part. And then I was named Quackers the Duck. And so I got this script that I couldn't read. And then my mom was like, wait a second, you are the lead of this show. And it turned out that Quackers the Duck had like hired the wolf to get the pigs out.
That goes deep. That's an inside job.
Yes, Quackers. Inside job. And I was like, Quackers the Duck is the protagonist, main character theory. Like I was like, oh great. This boosts my ego so much. So I couldn't read yet, but I was like already acting and stuff. And then, so I kept doing stage plays. And then one day I was doing a lot of like musicals and stuff. Cause when you're young, like that's kind of what they throw you into. And I told my dad, I was like, I like want to be considered a serious actor. I was 10. I thought I was Tatum O'Neill. He was like, well, then you need to audition for a real play, which I like now looking back, I'm like, musicals are real. But you know, like considered serious for like a child.
Yep.
And so then I auditioned for To Kill a Mockingbird at my local community theater. And then my mom read with me for the audition. And then they were like, well, you should play older Jean Louise, which is older Scout. And then Grace will play Scout. And my mom hated it, but I did get to do it. And then she put me into like on-camera stuff. And I got to work in Cartoon Network in Atlanta, which was such an incredible blessing. I got to like introduce cartoons. I was dancing for Bowling for Soup. It was like,
nice.
Oh my God, child stardom. And like, I auditioned for like Kid Nation, which was this reality show where they put children. It was like Survivor for children. There were lots of lawsuits. It ended up getting canned.
Not like Lord of the Flies, or was it?
1000% like Lord of the Flies. like, but I didn't get eaten or anything. But I didn't make it far, but I was just like, okay, maybe that's not what I want to do.
Yeah, sure.
Like I thought fame, like even at 12, I was like, oh, the more clout or like the more attention that I can get, the more legitimized I am as an actor. And I'm so glad I realized that very early on that that's not what that means to me. And so I just like kept acting in school, and then, eventually, you know, high school happened and my drama teacher, which I feel like a lot of people tell like great drama teacher stories. I'm going to tell not a great one. but I was upset because like I wasn't getting like the leads in the musical or whatever. And my drama teacher said, like, I think it'd be better if you didn't talk. And so, yeah. Right. This is like, what do I do now all the time? And so I said, okay, fine. I will enter a mime competition and I'll show you how great of a performer I can be without using my voice. And so I won, like, I went to nationals, like did all this stuff.
I love that. Like used a resentment to go, screw you, teach.
Okay, fine. I will do that. I can show you that I can do things with my body and like as a performer without, and I got to learn so much about storytelling through my body, and like learn through clowning and all that stuff. And so, luckily, you know, I kept doing musicals after that, but I was just like, I'm going to get you. And so, yeah, I decided in college to major in marketing and entrepreneurship because I thought there's no money in the arts. And I've utilized, what's weird is like, I think as actors and like you literally have just, we've just been talking about, we are small businesses as actors now.
Yeah.
We're small businesses, we're entrepreneurs. Yeah. And so I'm kind of glad that I've always had this like seller technique in me. I've always had this, marketing brain. So I understand like the scope of how something is presented and eventually sold, which I think, unfortunately, a lot of theater has to be, a lot of art has to be presented and like, hey, I would much rather, and this is why, and we'll get into like talking about my show, but like, I want people to want to see it. And then I'm going to flip the script on how you're perceiving it.
Yeah.
Cause as long as I can get you to buy a ticket, or as long as I can get your butt in a seat.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. You know, so whatever that takes, I'll be there. So that's kind of my long villain origin story of arts.
Oh, that was so cool. I identify with so much of that. For, I mean, I did a speech from To Kill a Mockingbird. I went to Far East Speech. The courtroom. So I'm a military brat and I spent 4 years in Okinawa, Japan. So I went to Seoul, Korea for Far East Speech and Drama and did one of the courtroom speeches. And I went around a classroom and I absolutely loved it. So yes, I spent 6 years of growing up in the Far East. And so yes, I did some Far East speech drama, you know, and the whole teaching, my first play, people have heard me, that what made me want to do it was The Princess and the Pea. And I think I was maybe 5 or 6 years old. And the mattresses were stacked probably 8 feet high, but to my brain, they were 20 stories high. And I was like, please feel the pain.
Yeah. Because it's magic to you. I mean, they've physically presented it, but also your brain is manifesting how it could be. And like, oh, that's so cool.
So you got up to New York. Mm-hmm. Was it after college or university? Did you?
Yeah. I was at the time I was a choreographer and performer in a theater company, and it was not a good situation for me. And I linked myself to a person who was getting their Broadway debut, and they were like, let's go to New York together. And I was like, this is my ticket out. I'm going to do it. And so I moved to New York because of that. And I immediately started working, not as an actor, like working in retail and stuff, because it just didn't occur to me, because I didn't go to school. I didn't get to go to like all like the NYUs and all the places, where they train you how to be an industry person.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought, well, it'll happen. Somebody will come up to me and I'll be famous. Like, that's how this will happen. Like an idiot. Also, I was so incredibly privileged being like from the South, like right at the beginning of my like high school journey and stuff was when Atlanta became like a film town.
Hotbed, yeah.
So I thought, oh, it'll be like that for me in the city. And obviously it wasn't. So I started trying to figure out like, okay, if I can't be selected randomly in New York City for theater and whatnot, like even when you audition, like it's still a crapshoot, right? I should just do my own work. And so I'd always wanted to be, I always thought like, okay, I can get laughs sometimes in a room. I'm going to start doing stand up. And so I started doing that. That was also very scary and hard because, again, I had no concept of like bar culture and like male stand-up culture.
I mean, I literally just went a bit sick because I don't know how
no.
That is really, really, really hard.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about like,
I mean, this is coming from somebody who's never tried it. I'm just going, yeah. It looks too hard.
It's even Pat, you know, as a performer, how hard it is to get on stage, yeah, regardless, of course. Right?
Yeah.
Think about like not being wanted for your own thoughts. And then like, think about that. You know what I mean? Like when you're presenting someone else's work.
Mm, yeah.
Okay. Like nobody's being like, you're not that
you can
funny.
Blame the writer.
Like, they're like,
yes, exactly. The director sucked.
Right. But like when it's you, you're being judged completely. And then on top of that, when you do stand up in New York, you're expected to sell seats. So if your friends don't want to shell out $60 plus two drinks, because who freaking does? Ooh. Your time is cut down on how much time you get to perform stand up. So let's say that I've perfected 5 minutes and then three of my friends show up, I might get 2 minutes. It's just such a crapshoot. I know it's, yeah. And then your friends have already spent however much money. It's insane. And so I always tell people like, it's much bigger, I think, than like the anxiety of performing. It's also like this bizarre business that I think needs an overhaul, which is why I started a stand-up show at StubHub, like right before the pandemic, to be able to like give performers stage time that didn't cost them anything. Yep. And then if people showed up, they're able to donate to charities that I care about. So, yeah.
How do you get from stand-up and where you are? And so that you said just before lockdown, because then how did you get onto the Broadway radio scene? Was the Tell Me on a Sunday first? Because you do have, I believe that's how you did it. But because I kind of came into Tell Me on a Sunday in season two, having met you through Broadway Radio. But how did that come about?
Oh, thank you. So yeah, I knew that I wanted to start a podcast like forever ago, because I obviously like talking, which is annoying. famously, we've been talking about that. But I didn't want to just have an interview podcast that wasn't like you have a specific, like there's an idea behind this format, right?
Yeah.
I've seen so many people have podcasts that are just like, it's me talking to people. Hope you like it. And I'm like, okay, but you know, being a person in this industry, like I want to know, I think that everyone can like pimp out whatever they want to talk about. Like, oh, I'm doing the show or I'm doing this next project. But I'd rather go, okay, like, can you tell me the story of like this time where you spilt milk on my friend? Because I remember that, or whatever it is. You know, I think that storytelling is so often not asked about anymore, because we don't have shows like Oprah. We don't have shows where we are really asking the questions that we want to know from other creatives. And so I thought it would be a fun opportunity to do that. And then Matt somehow picked it up and then suggested me for Broadway Radio, which I'm so fortunate to do, because like, I love talking about theater and the industry that I'm so incredibly close to, that I was like, oh, this is such a great opportunity. So then I got to do them both in tandem, which is great.
I think it's amazing. I mean, Matt Timonini is just, you know, I reached out to him when it came to launching a podcast, and, you know, I was listening to Today on Broadway from almost the very beginning, in the way old days when he just started, and kind of got in touch with Matt and James, say we want to start something. And they were so gracious. They were absolutely brilliant. And so then, you know, in my first trip to New York in ages, Matt and I met up and I was his theater date, and I'm trying to get him over to London so he could be my theater date.
Yeah. And you know, I've never met Matt.
Have you never met Matt?
Never met Matt or James.
How crazy is that? Okay.
Yeah, I just met Ashley like a month ago.
So I had to reach out to you, Grace, after hearing her story, which season two, episode one, it floored me. And I reached out afterwards and I was like, I thanked you for being honest, because there are things that happen in our lives. And I connected with that story, with the pain and then the brutal honesty with which you told it. And that is a hell of an episode of podcast, and everyone should go and listen to it because it is incredible.
Thank you.
Was that something that you set out to do when you did this podcast?
Not at all. Like, again, like my format for all of season one is so like, I'm just talking to my friends, you know, And in lockdown, halfway through it, which I know you have learned from listening to that episode, I had to stop my podcast, and then I went into like hiding, and I went into seclusion for like almost a year.
Wow.
And the rumor mills that I started to hear about me became so incredibly toxic to my brain that I was like, if I don't utilize some sort of format or platform that I have that can be mine, that I am not trying to damn anyone, or I'm doing storytelling, I can say that that's what I'm doing, and I'm not going to be hurt. Hopefully, you know, I've been hit with a lot of lawsuit stuff, and it's just like very scary for me still now. But I just was like, I've never heard anything like this. So if I've never heard anything like this, that means that someone is out there that has never heard this, that is dealing with something like this. And if this can help, I can't tell you how many DMs that I have received from, especially women. I got one 2 days later that said, "I'm leaving. Thank you. I'm getting a divorce," or like whatever it was. And I was so stunned, because first of all, I didn't write anything that I said. I literally plugged everything in. Mm-hmm. I started talking for an hour. I unplugged it and sent it to my editor. I was like, I don't want to know what I said. I actually don't remember. I blacked out. So I just hope that it would help people. And so now with other things that I'm like working on, I just go like, how can I help someone feel heard today? Even if it's one person. Mm-hmm. I think that that's what real storytelling and real art, that's what we can do for other people. And so that's kind of what I set out to do after I decided to put it into the world. So thank you very much for listening to it. And I really appreciate it, because I can tell you that it was very difficult for my editor to edit. They reached out to me a couple times that week, who also happens to be my younger brother. He's a sound engineer.
Amazing.
And so he had not heard a lot of that. And had a difficult time. And I was like, oh, is it hard to hear? And he was like, yeah, it's a little, and I was like, oh, okay, I'm sorry. Like, so, you know, now I understand, like, you know, content warnings are important. Trigger warnings are important. And I didn't think that I would necessarily need to do that here. And then now I've learned, yes. But yeah, thank you for listening to it. I don't want to talk about it any more than like that, cause I don't want, you know, people to feel ostracized in any way, but, thank you. And, I hope that it does help someone, but you reaching out meant a lot. So thank you.
We're going to break now for a tiny word from our sponsors.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
Hey everyone, this is Salisha Thomas from Black Hair and the Big Leagues, part of the Broadway Podcast Network. Welcome back to the Curtain Call Podcast.
So Grace, please tell me, in less words than it took me to ask you the question when we weren't recording, where to free fucking bird, where the idea came from, how the story started, how the whole show came to be.
Okay, I'm getting like some sirens.
I love sirens. This is all good. Yes,
it makes you feel like you're in New York City.
Exactly.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Well, we're in Hoboken, so okay. So. A little lamer. 2.5 years ago, I started going to the Barrow Group, which I don't know if you knew them, off Broadway. I love their work. I started going to school there. They have like a 1 year acting program that I would just really subscribe to. Anne Hathaway went there. So I'm just saying.
Just saying.
I'm not her. And so I enrolled there, and I saw that they offered storytelling / solo show workshops. And I had never heard of anybody even having that as a like a workshop class. And the teacher, Seth Barish, who directs all of Mike Birbiglia's solo work, teaches it. Mm. And so I was like, well, if I'm going to take it from anybody, it's like that guy. So I got into the class and the structure was so great because I was like, I don't really know what I want to say. And because everybody had like different stages, that was so cool is that everybody had different stages. Some people brought in like their full show. They're like, this is where I'm at. And then some people, I had nothing. I had some index cards. And
all good art starts with index cards, right?
Like, he said, you know, tell me a funny story about like something like nothing like an inanimate objects or something. And so I said, oh, I've got a story about a brick. And so I told like a 10-minute story about this one brick, which I won't get into. And then he was like, okay. And, what's like the boom curtain of that? And I was like, what are you saying? And he was like, well, what's the climax of that story? And I said, well, that, I don't think that really has a climax. I think it's like part of a greater story. And he was like, okay, well, whatever that is, whatever you think that is, write that down and then decide whenever you could say boom curtain, that is the climax of your show. And that's where you can stop. And if you're not done storytelling, you're not done with the show.
Right.
And so I was like, oh, okay. And so kind of like went home and over the course of like 10 weeks, I just started throwing around different stories and putting them in different order. And then I started working with the director who I met in that class, Kate Robards, who also had done solo workshops and solo work herself. And she kept saying like, where are you in this? Cause I kept telling stories, not about me, which famously I'm like, no, your story. That's what I love. And she was like, yeah, but you're not in this. And so I think that people need to understand who you are. And I was like, well, I don't think that's fun. I like talking about other people and things. I don't find myself particularly interesting. And what I realized is that like, we all have stories within us
yeah.
If I don't utilize like what I'm doing to tell my story, how can I expect others to do that whenever I ask that of them? So that's what this piece is. It's just, I've worked on it on and off. I've changed the order. I've never really changed like fully how it ends. Cause I think that's the truth of what it stands for. I'm being so cryptic, which sucks, but it's just me being like, please see the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's predominantly told in a stand-up style. So, okay. You'll be able to see like how I guess I work with a microphone. I also learned that like being able to hold something physically helped ground me, because not having anything at all, I can project my ass off. Okay. Like I can do that. But you know, what if I didn't have to rely on my sound? Cause there's sometimes when you want to be quiet, and having a microphone allows you to do that.
Yeah.
So it's just a 1 hour, 10 minute, no intermission, me standing, me talking, me sitting.
Brilliant. And it was done at She Atlanta, or is that where?
Yeah, this was the first time I ever submitted a script, because I've never actually physically been a writer. Mm-hmm. I don't consider myself a writer. I think that word has always sounded really pretentious to me. I don't think that writers are pretentious. I just mean like, I thought me calling myself a writer was like, oh, that's a little heady. That's for other people. And so that was the first time I was like, well, if I want my work to get like considered for a thing, I have to submit a script. And all I've ever done is record voice audio of my stories into my phone and then been like, well, that's my script. So I've never written anything.
Right.
And so I had to sit down and like really transpose all the dumb, haha, whatevers into a script. And then they selected it out of however many submissions, as a writing piece, which made me feel so legitimate as a creator. Cause I was like, oh, my writing, you liked my writing. It wasn't cause you liked my headshot. Like it was cause you liked my writing, which was so cool. And so yeah, SheATL, because of the pandemic, said, what if we didn't do like a full run?
Yeah.
What if we utilized our financial resources and filmed it with an incredible camera crew of Saturn Blue Productions?
Pro tape.
Yeah, a pro tape it and then stream it. And I was like, yeah, accessibility matters to me. So me getting to do it for one night in Atlanta, them filming it on like three cameras and then editing it right now. I know, I'm really excited about it.
God.
I'm not going to watch it, but I hope you do. So
I've donated, and I hope I'll get my link, I suppose. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
We'll watch it as a family. We'll sit down and watch it. So it's all good.
How old are your boys?
1930. Oh my God. Come on. They live with me.
You're fine. Yeah. Okay. 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 Fair. Yeah. Okay. You're like, it's a theater household.
It's a theater household. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think this is, a perfect way for new story, because you say it's your first writing piece to be taken seriously as a writer. How important is that for you to open up that stream of storytelling?
It's so hard to get people to go, right? Already, you know, theater can be difficult. You never know what night it's going to be. People have jobs, people have lives, people have financial struggles, people have accessibility struggles. And I just go like, what if, you know, cause I have been really hard on myself about Zoom theater a lot of times, because I get nervous that if I'm not able to receive like personal interaction, that I can't do the thing. So having an audience for the filming of it was so important to me.
Amazing.
And I just wonder if like, if we can offer that to people and then film it and then be able to like crank it out, because I know editing processes, I can't imagine, but getting to do that, I think is going to be able to foster, especially me as an artist, like this is how I can probably get it picked up to like take it to other theaters. This is how I can get it to, you know, just so much more, because if I don't have a butt and a seat that has some kind of like ties to something else that produces or whatever, they don't ever know. They'll never know. But now I can send them a link and say, hey,
have
what about this?
Have
you know,
I honestly think this is going to be the great leveler in storytelling. And I believe that every theater worth is all, this is my prediction. Who is it that Matt obviously says he is? Because we have Mystic Meg over here in the UK, and I can't remember.
Is it Cleo?
Cleo. Is it Cleo? Miss Cleo or something like that. Is that all of these theaters, especially the satellite theaters, will become mini studios.
I hope so, right?
That's how this is at my fervent wish, is that that gets you paid. It gets everyone else on the thing paid. And it just generates more money. It becomes more accessible, because the more people that do that, the less you have to charge for someone to come and watch your show. But it comes out in the end that everybody's getting paid properly for their art. Okay, I have just a couple more questions for you, because I think I said I was going to have like 20 minutes of your time, and I've stolen an hour of your life.
Yeah, no. First of all, we knew we weren't going to talk for 20 minutes. So I'm sorry.
I can talk for 20 minutes ordering supper, you know, it's terrible. So what advice would you give to anyone that was looking for doing a one person or one woman show to put forward? What would be your words of wisdom, or what would be the first step words that you would pass on to them?
I would say, watch everything you can, and then write down what you liked about it and what made you uncomfortable. I watch so much, like, especially like stand-up specials. Like one of my favorites is Hasan Minhaj's Homecoming King. It's on Netflix.
Okay.
And I was watching it and I was like, I like so much about this, because I think that I'm drawn to the stand-up element, but he like worked the stage like a play, and he was able to sell people on the idea of storytelling, but without doing that at all, because people knew him as a comic. Because I don't think that people initially go like, I would like to see a play today, please, by one person, sign me up. Like, that's not always the thing. But he said, it's my comedy special. And you know, you go back to George Carlin and stuff, he's been doing it. Like, everybody's been pressing these albums for years, but like, we've gotten away from it. And so I am very eagerly excited about people like Jacqueline Novak that are doing like Get on Your Knees and like touring it and just being like, we can go back to this. We've been doing this for generations. We've been storytelling by ourselves like forever. So I recommend, my biggest recommendation is to watch everything, take in all bits of culture.
So Grace, where do people find the links and everything else to get a ticket for your show?
All of our, all those links can be found on my social medias at It's Grace Aki on Instagram, Twitter, wherever. But you can also follow SheNYC Arts, shenycarts.org, I believe, for ticketing. But like literally anywhere that you can see me on social media, like I'm linking it up. So I'm so appreciative, and it's through DonorUp. So it's, they're a nonprofit organization. You can donate to them while you're buying a ticket, because the tickets start at like $5. I can't even get a chai latte for $5. So
it is $5. It's so worth it. It is like you say, a chai. This is so much better than a chai latte. And
we'll agree to disagree. But yeah, I mean, I'll let you decide after you see the show. But thank you.
And the other places you can hear you on Broadway Today, on Broadway, on Broadway Radio, Tell Me on a Sunday podcast, hopefully many more, Grace. I cannot wait to watch it. I'll send you an email afterwards just to let you know what I thought. I'm so
excited.
Would
love that.
The energy that you bring to the podcast that you do, but also your storytelling in something that was really hard to tell. And I cannot wait to see what you bring to Free Mockingbird. And I will put all the links in the show notes. Just go and buy a ticket, guys. Support art.
Also, I want to throw this out there. There are two other shows in the festival performance.
Oh, fantastic. Okay.
You could see all three shows for $15, truly. So you could see 3+ hours of theater spread out throughout those days for $15. It's such a good deal.
Amazing. It's a great deal. Grace, I'm so glad to have met you virtually, and maybe when I get to New York. I have put it out there one day. I really do hope to get to work with you on stage at some point, you know. And
I would really love that.
Putting it out in the universe that it actually happens. And
I respect your work so much. So that would be really exciting.
Thank
for
you so much,
everybody.
Grace. But we'll do it. But break legs, have a great run, and we'll speak to you soon.
Thank you.
The incomparable Grace Aki, actress, stand-up comic, and podcaster extraordinaire. Now, before I go, just a few housekeeping bits. A quick reminder that you can download and subscribe to the podcast from the Apple Podcast app or from iTunes. That way your feed will be automatically updated when we release episodes. But you can also listen to us on many other fine podcast streaming services such as Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, all of them, all of them. Please rate and review our podcast if you have a spare 30 seconds and help us reach more theater lovers out there around the globe. Now, you can follow us on all the socials, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Curtain Call. You can follow me personally at John Schwab. I'd love to hear from you if you have any suggestions or feedback for this podcast. Just please get in touch with me via any of the social media platforms I just mentioned or write to me personally at john@curtaincallonline.com. Don't forget to sign up for a free profile on Curtain Call if you're a theater, live events, or entertainment professional. Go over to curtaincallonline.com. It's super, super simple. We just launched our new platform, partly funded by Innovate UK, to help our industries get their professionals back to work. So it doesn't matter where you live in the world, what job you do in the live events, theater, live performance, TV, film. If you are a creative artist, if you work in front of the camera, behind the camera, on stage, backstage, sign up for a free profile. Do it. You will not regret it. Now, it just leaves me to say a huge thank you to Grace Aki for joining me this week. Please donate at least a super affordable $5 to see the streaming performance of To Free a Mockingbird from the 11th to the 16th of September. And for a meager $15, 15 of your Earth dollars, that's about 10 of your Earth pounds, you can catch all three shows. Details can be found on any of Grace's social link at ITSGRACEAKI. You can find it on her website, graceaki.com, SheATA Arts Facebook page, that's SheATL. Or donorup.org and search for the SheATL Summer Theater Festival. Loads of places you can find the link, so you have no excuses for not doing it. Thank you to Shure Microphones for continuing to be our equipment sponsor for this podcast. And a huge thank you to the incredibly talented and extremely upbeat Salisha Thomas. I think Salisha, you and Grace need to meet. Salisha is of the Black Hair in the Big Leagues podcast. If you haven't checked out her podcast, it's time to head on over to Broadway Podcast Network website or app and do just that. Check her out. And listen, a big thank you to all of you who tune in regularly to this podcast. Without you, we wouldn't be where we are today. Thank you so much. I look forward to bringing you even more episodes as we start to get back to whatever normal we find ourselves in. And I will speak to you soon. Stay safe and look after yourselves. Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation. for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.